Kufyud Zayin Al Yamoid Adam Ladaber im Melamdi Tinaikos. Okay, Kufyud Zayin, talking about ethics, honesty and ethics. Al Yamoid Adam Ladaber im Melamdi Tinaikos Pen Yivat Lem Bidvarov. Person should not talk to someone while they are working. Now, the chiddush over here is it goes without saying a person is doing a very highly skilled job where you need full concentration and you are distracting them, you are causing a loss to the employer. A person is, let's say you're a nuclear scientist, you're a computer programmer, you got to really concentrate what you're doing. And if you go and you strike up a conversation with this fellow, you're taking away from his concentration. By taking away from his concentration, he's not able to perform, he's not able to achieve what he needs to do. So obviously you are stealing from someone. A person hires a worker to do a job, it requires full, intense concentration, and you get in their way, you start talking to them, they're not concentrating, and they're not performing 100%. Okay, that's davar poshut, admoid. But what about a person who's doing a job that really does not involve all that much concentration? The guy's a babysitter. Okay, you're a baby. The guy is a babysitter. He's sitting there in the house. The kids are running around, and it's a gun, and the kids are running around, and you call him up on the telephone, and you talk to him. So are you really taking away from the employer of this fellow? The guy can walk and chew gum at the same time. It's no big deal that he can guard, he can take care of the children at the same time that the child is doing work. So he says, no, you're not allowed to do that. Al yamoid adam ladaber im melamdi tinekos. A person has to speak to melamdi tinekos, which he would think is something which does not require much concentration. You're just looking over them and making sure they're studying. Pen yivat lem bidvara, because by doing so, you can mevatel these people, these rabbeim, these teachers, by your conversation. I'll give you a mashal. I always found a very strong fellow that I knew. He would give bar mitzvah lessons. And, you know, he needed the money, obviously. Everyone needs the money, and he was giving bar mitzvah lessons. And also, at the same time he was giving bar mitzvah lessons, he was writing a Megillah. So he was doing, I always saw him doing these two things at the same exact time. He was writing while he was listening to the child, prepare for his bar mitzvah, and laying the aliyah, and he kept on telling him, giving him pointers. No, you're not doing it correctly. You have to pause here. You have to do this. This person's a genius. He was a Baal Kriya. He already probably when he was like 15 years old, you already know who called her Rukula, Baal Peh. And I once asked him, do you ever prepare to lane on Shabbos? I have to lane on Shabbos, I have to spend 10 hours. Even a parsha, I already lane 10 times. This doesn't go. Thick head. This fellow, by the time he's 15 years old, he knew the whole Torah Baal Peh. And I asked, do you ever prepare on Shabbos? So he says, La halacha, you mechuyev to look it over. Sai said, so when do you look it over? La halacha, I have to look it over. So when? Ben gavra la gavra. And he's not joking. And
what?
Oh, good kasha. What about a kohen? And guys, the guy is not joking. And he never, ever, ever makes a mistake. Fluent. He's quick. He's sharp. He's loud. He's like all the milas. And like, I'm looking at this guy. This guy is not for real. But it did bother me. I found that it did bother me that when he was teaching this kid how to lane, at the same time he's teaching, he's writing. So what bothered me is that it's not good for the child. The child does not get a good impression when their teacher is seen, like Marasayan, as being preoccupied, even though you'll tell me he's such a genius, he's giving him even more attention than the average person would give someone who's only focusing on teaching, right? You're only focusing on teaching. He's giving him more attention than the person that's only focused. But to the child who's studying, you know, it's unsettling. To me, I would find it very unsettling. All right, none of my business, to each his own. No, men cannot multitask. As a davar yidua admoid, a woman has this ability. She can be running a business and she can be going for a higher education and can make supper and talk on the phone and be doing the laundry and negotiating a hostage terrorist release all at the same time. It's a mitzvah. It's amazing. A man cannot walk and chew gum at the same time. It's a fact. But the trade-off is, after the tape recorder, the trade-off is, okay, this is not going to like, is that men, though, generally, at least I find, have the ability, even though they can't do two things at the same time, the one thing that they do, they have the ability to go deep. It's easier for a man to delve deeply into something. Whereas a woman, they do. I'm not saying they don't. But it's a trade-off. It's a trade-off. A woman has a very natural ability, but they're chal, to multitask. And a man does not, but a man has more of an ability to delve deeply, much more so than a woman. That's my experience with men and men. Not that it's not, you can overcome it. A man can train himself to multitask, and a woman can train herself to delve. But what is a person's natural disposition? Hashem made men from the earth of Mars and women from the earth of Venus with different creatures. Menela, but there's a certain natural disposition. So here, he's writing over here a very interesting insight, Sefer Chassidim. If you see someone doing something, it goes without saying if he's doing something very complex and he's being paid by the hour, and you start having a conversation, even not by the hour, he's being paid for the job, and you start having a conversation with him, do you realize that you're a ganus? You are stealing from the employer. The employer hired a person to do a job. If the person will devote himself fully to the job, the quality of the job will be that much greater, that much better. By you engaging in a conversation with the fellow who is currently working, no one's going to stop you. No one is going to say, what are you doing? You're a ganav. No one's gonna, but the truth is, you are a ganav. You're taking away from someone else. There's an employer. He's paying good money to a person to do a job. By you distracting him, you're taking away from the quality of the work. You're allowed to go call up someone who's at work. Think about it. 9 to 5. You know you have a friend. He's a job. He has a regular job. He works 9 to 5, whatever he does. And you're allowed to even call him up during working hours. He's going to answer the phone. He's going to answer. And he's going to be very happy to talk to you and spend 10, 15 minutes. And the something that's really, if he can't talk to you, he won't answer. He won't answer if he can't. If he's in the middle of a meeting, in the middle of something. Okay, but think of it. He's saying over here that if you're really an ethical person, okay, really, you shouldn't do that. It's not the right thing for you to call up your fellow man when he's working at his regular job because you're a ganav. You're stealing from the employer. You're the person you're trying to reach will answer the phone, will engage in the conversation, and that time is not their own, and it's taking away from what someone is paying them to do. And you'll argue, but it's self-understood. There are certain conventions in society that people are allowed to answer telephone calls from their relatives, as long as it does not interfere with their work. That's right. There are definitely things that you're allowed to do. You're allowed to go to the bathroom. You're allowed to go and check your email every here and there. I mean, most places of work, you know, you can answer your phone during the day. No one's stopping you. Just get the job done. There's certain understanding, but there are things that sometimes you really go overboard. I would say in the workforce today, the big thing is surfing the web. Okay, people have a job. Every single person, b'liyotzim naklal, works in front of a computer. And who doesn't have a Yetzirah to go look at the news, to go to your favorite website, to go to your Facebook account, to go to Twitter, to go to see what's going on, to go to Amazon and go buy something? Chaperayim. It only takes 3 minutes. 3 minutes turns into an hour half most of the time. But who's stopping you, right? So, you know, it used to be years ago when the internet was fresh, was just coming out, the employers, they didn't let it. They actually controlled the environment where they did not let people. I know someone who was a lawyer. And when the internet first started, people had a real Yetzirah, so they basically locked down a big law firm many, many years ago. They basically locked down the internet. It was, and if you want internet, in the lobby, in the hall. In the hall, there was a workstation. Anyone who needs the internet, in the hall, in public space, there's a terminal where you can go and you can surf the web. So who's going to go there in the middle of the day? That Amazon didn't exist then, or maybe when it just got started. Who's going to go there and start surfing the web? If you go, everyone is seeing what you're doing. You're on display. They're going to look what you're looking at. Or they're going to, they're going to get. Is it legitimate? Why you need? Oh yeah, I need it for work. Okay, fine. But that came to an end very quickly because people they demanded. Listen, I'm a human being. I need to check my email every couple of minutes, and it's part of the perks, part of the convention of working. But he's saying if that's true, fine. But we all know good and well there are limits. There are levels where you've gone too far. Your employer lets you check your email maybe once an hour, maybe twice an hour. But if you're going to sit for 45 minutes surfing the web and only work 15 minutes an hour, obviously you're a ganav. Does he know you're a ganav?
Yes.
Does he know you're a ganav? Does he still pay you? Just because he's paying you doesn't mean that you're not a ganav. What am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to go fire him and deal with the fallout and then waste another whole week trying to find someone else, and who says that would be even better? So I can't fire him. No, that's the way the world is. Just swallow it and go weiter. But you who are engaging in this activity, you are not ethical. You are not ethical. That's the way it is. Just because they're not firing you and now you turn the tables, this is the way the world works. That's wrong. And you who call him up from 9 to 5 and engage him in these activities and take him away, that's also not ethical. So we're so brainwashed. But you do whatever you want in this world, but the truth is, there's a Torah, and there's Musa, there's ethics, and he writes over here, you have a guy teaching a child. He's a babysitter. That's really what he is, a babysitter. Today, they say that. Today, what is a high school? Today, glorified babysitting service.
In seminary.
What? Seminaries, some of them are. That's right, some of them are. It used to be a seminary, it was a year to learn, an experience, a religious experience. You go and you study, you learn the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, and you gain a ruchnius. Today, that's a miut. Very, very few. Today, it's more of the experience of going to Eretz Yisrael. It's just a camp. You go to camp for a whole year. That's what it turned into. And people have wisened up, and they realize this, because the average student is not really... doesn't need to go, it's not going to learn. They're just going to camp for a year. So camp, you don't have to go for a whole year. You go for half a year. A lot of seminaries now, the parents are wising up that there's really, if their child is on the caliber where they're going to study and steig away, whether it's a boy and a girl, all right. And then like the old-fashioned days, you go, you learn, you find a good school, you go and you sit and you learn in the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, away from all the distractions. But if your child is not on that level, and he's just going to have a good time, you want to go to camp? All right, I'll give you a present. You go to camp for 3 months, for 4 months, but not a whole year. It's a waste of time. That's what's happening today. It's very good. Yeah.
No, I say sometimes there's a lull in the work.
All right, that's definitely true. You work for the city, they all complain about that.
You have to get somebody else to continue.
That's very, very true. That's very true. I heard it a lot. I know people who work and they say the employer has nothing for them to do. They do all the work in 5 minutes.
Or you depend on somebody else to continue the work for you.
Oh, there are times when the work is so intense you can't sleep for weeks. And then there are times when there's literally nothing to do. And you sit the whole day doing nothing. So in Echonami, so every situation is obviously Ram Shutim Ad Ma'oid. You cannot generalize. Every situation is different. The problem, though, that the Sefer Chassidim is drawing our attention to is to understand that you have to use your Seichel, and just because you can does not mean you should. Okay, that's the key. Just because you can does not mean you should. Al yamoid adam ledaber im milamdi tinoikos pen yivat leim bidvarav. You'll be mevatel them. Who is the mevatel leim? In the farshim, it's not so simple. It means yivat leim. It doesn't necessarily mean the kids. It means the teachers. You're distracting the teacher. What is over here on the side? I saw a whole write-up on this, a whole explanation. What is yivat leim going on? He writes over, he doesn't even say anything over here. On the bottom, does it say over here on the bottom? I have the paper, I have the bigger dish to have over here on the top of here. Maybe look later on. Who's your volume going on? Is it going on the children or going on the Rebbeim? Pash is going on the Rebbeim. The Melamde Tinoikos. Pen Yavad Lem Yimvat, the Melamde Tinoikos Bedvarav. Sol Ban Yechani Amagra, the Abba Chilkia Ben Bitai. Shalei Ratzu Lachoshe B'Melocha Afilu Shalom. The proof that it means that, look at the story he quotes. Someone said to him, good morning. Shalom Aleichem. They did not answer back. So right away they would write them up in the newspaper. Oh, they're such a nasty people. Such a community. You say good morning. You say good morning to the gardener. I passed by this guy's house, and there's the gardener there, from guy, and I said good morning to him. And he didn't say good morning to me. You see what happens when you go to yeshiva? You say good morning to a Ben Torah. He's now a gardener. He works in landscaping business, a big business. I said good morning to him. He doesn't want to say good morning to me. What kind of nasty guy is this? You know something? Who says he's allowed to say good morning to you? By answering good morning to you, you're being mevatel him from his malacha. He's the one who's right not to say good morning to you. He's busy. He's working. Even responding good morning can be distracting. So he did not. These were serious people. Choni Hamagel, the Abba Chilkia ben Bitoy, Abba Chilkia, the son of his daughter, Shalei Ratzu Lechoshe B'Melocha Afilu Shalom. Why? Kedisa B'Tainis, Keshmas Lo Shalom Zugud Rabbanan, when a Talmidei Chacham, to Gedoyle Hadar, Rabban, Rosh Yeshiva come, they say to the gardener, good morning, and the gardener is a Ben Torah, and he doesn't answer the Rosh Yeshivas. What kind of chutzpah is this? Who's right? They're right. The Rosh Yeshivas are wrong for saying good morning. The guy's working. Don't be mavatim from his malacha. Well, here's some kol shchein b'malecha shamayim. Certainly, if someone is teaching children, there's a rebbe, he's teaching children, and you go and you text him the whole day, or you go and you call him up, and he answers. He's not supposed to answer. But he doesn't care what he's not supposed to. He'll anyway answer the phone. But you don't take advantage of that by you going and you're assisting. You can't say technically he did an avera because you're not the one who did it. He's the one who answered, but you are encouraging him. Kol shekein b'meleches shamayim, oror ose meleches Hashem b'remir. Cursed is the person who does melacha with deceit, meaning he's stealing. He makes believe I'm working for you full time, and most of the day I'm surfing the web. Okay, this is a very powerful Musar Haskel ethics, business ethics in the marketplace, and these things are, are not really lost on deaf ears.
Rabbi,
yes.
Is there a concept that the gardener may say, look at that Jewish guy, he never says good morning. Look at that rabbi.
Obviously, there's a balance. Look, the symbol I gave to you is not true. Today, it's unacceptable for a person. No one is in a madrega today that when they're like an example I gave you, that you're not going to answer back good morning. That's totally ridiculous. I just gave you the example of the Gemara. The Gemara, they live in a different league. But there is definitely truth in this halacha, as we all know, where things get way, way out of hand. Your employer obviously is going to let you surf the web for 2-3 minutes here and there. Okay, there's no question. Everyone, you got to go have a phone call. You got to make personal phone calls. You ever have a business where you can't go call your wife in the middle of the day? Okay, before they had cell phones. Or you can't go take the phone of the car. You're working for a bank. You're working for a law firm. You're working for an accounting firm. You can't go pick up the phone and dial your wife and call her. It costs the company. Every phone call you cost. In those days, it wasn't unlimited. One fare. Every phone call, there's another. 5 cents, 10 cents. Of course you can do so. That's part of life. I'm hiring you to work for me. Of course you can go. You can call your wife once a day on my cost. You don't have to ask the question. Bielski writes about this. There are certain things that are self-understood. But when they're going to let you surf them, the end is half the day, every single day, you're surfing the web, going to every stupid website, and looking at every mishigas, and shopping online, and you make believe you're working, and you tell them, the reason why I didn't finish the project was because it's so complicated. Excuse me. It's not very complicated. It's just that you're wasting the whole day. That's what it means. There are things that are acceptable. There are things that are too far. Next halacha.
Very nice.
You said Rosh Hashiva telling the gardener of the yeshiva good morning. He says further in the brisayla,
He says, Bayah said,
to him they were. Right, exactly. He actually cites that. Right, very good, excellent. You're saying, Yermuloy, he actually says that. What does he say over here in the page?
On the bottom.
So let's read that. Let's read that. Excellent, excellent. Okay.
Tomorrow's 20 on my book.
Oh, so we have over here Zechus Yogin Aleinu. Look, let's read that. It's very good. Look, okay, on the bottom, the Bris Olam, on page Kuf Yud Zayin on the bottom. Look what it says. Shalorot Shavuos is coming up. We have Rus is coming up very soon. Shalohayorot Lohashi B'Moloch Afilu Shalom. Al Pize Shamati. I've heard. Kavona Sakasa Birus. It says that when Boaz came into the field, Vihine Boaz. Vayoymer lakoitzrim, he said to the harvesters, Hashem imochem. What was their response? Vayoymru loy. The workers said back to Boaz, Yivarechicho Hashem. Question, the word lo is superfluous. The teva slo nir yisera. Why does it say that the workers said back to him? The pasuk should just say, Vayoymru, Yivarechicho Hashem. Why loy? The answer is only to Boaz were they allowed to answer because he was their employer. So by saying good morning to them, he's explicitly giving them permission to respond. But if someone else said good morning to them, they're not allowed to respond. What does it take to respond? To say Yivarechecho Hashem. Incredible. Even 1 second is gezel. It's not just gezel in time. You have to appreciate the psychology. We all know that to be so. A distraction. A distraction changes the dynamics of what you're doing. Omnam lamadu me'aba chilkia shepoil ein loy lohoshif shaloy mumistavra the im habalabayis atzmo. It goes without saying that the balabayis themselves who knows him shalom lepoil yachlach zir lo shalom. The vaday al zenas lo shalom kadesh yachsel lo shalom. Vizesh omar vayomu la koitz shemashemim ochem who hoy balabayis. Ulze, that's why ksiv vayomu loy. Kiloimar, Tafka Loy, only to Boaz who gave them permission. Shubalabaya se Shivai. Avala Achash Nasan Lachem Shalem Lo Yeshivai. The Ika Bittel Purta, there is Bittel Malacha. Okay, next halacha. Kuf Chaf Hey. This is an amazing halacha. This something is very, very interesting. Misha Einet Sarach Labriyois Vuhulokechme. A person that does not need money. Person, he has Baruch Hashem, he's blessed, he has what he needs, he doesn't need to take money. Einoy nift, and yet he goes and he unethically takes money that he does not need. So what happens? It's a curse, a unique curse. He will not leave this world until he loses all of his assets and indeed needs to take money for real. Ein nift min ha'olam ad sheyitzarech, until he actually needs money. Okay, so that's one. Now we come to something which is. Okay, that's self-understood. I mean, that's important to realize. And not to, if you don't need, don't take. But here is something that's very frightening. V'chein hamib hamikapeach es shokov. If Rachmanu Litzlan, a person, let's say, does not need to sit in a wheelchair. No need. Person, Baruch Hashem, is healthy, can walk regularly. Oh, you know, I like a wheelchair. You know what? You come to the airport. I don't want to walk. Oh, why should I walk? I'll just tell the guy I need a wheelchair. I don't need a wheelchair. I'm a healthy, healthy person. Healthy. I want to sit in the wheelchair. I want them to wheel me around. And you make believe just for, everyone else walks, so why can't you walk? I can walk just as well as everyone else. No, I'm a privileged character. I'm going to sit in a wheelchair. Or crutches, whatever you want, you do these type of things. Or you make believe you're blind. Go put a patch on your eye. Oh, everyone has rachmanis on you. You make believe you're blind. Someone who does this, a person who makes believes that his thighs do not function. Okay, I don't know the translation, but it means something along the lines that they do not function properly. You make believe that you're blind. It says here something very, very frightening. There's a curse. Where did this curse come from? I don't know the source for this. It doesn't say the source of this. That's what, very good. Okay, that's Al Tifel Satan. That's an expression. Maybe that's a source. That sounds very good. Lo Yetze Min, well, not really. It's a little bit different, that idea. Tifel Satan, but it's a concept. Lo Yetze Min Olam Ad Sheyavoy Lidei Midazo. He will not leave this world until he comes lidei midazo, until he comes to
fulfillment.
He becomes blind, or he actually needs to sit in a wheelchair. Now, this is very. What about an actor? Okay, they're not coming to ask the shilas, but in school plays, in school notes, it's not so simple. It's really not so simple at all. Okay, let's talk about the goyim first. No one's coming to ask, but there are major films, movies. Some of them are very chashuv. They're very historical films, which are very chashuv, where there's a need for an actor to play the part of a person who's blind, or a person who's a cripple, or a person who has a deformity. Okay, so if we had Louis, let's say there would be a from Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, is it proper for him to play that part? And where is it nogea? Where is it relative? In school plays. Okay, they have school plays all the time, in camp especially, and the question is it appropriate to play that part? It's a very tough question. Where else is it nogea? Purim spiels. Purim costumes. Okay? Should you get dressed up on Purim like Haman? Should you get dressed up like a galach? I once saw a galach. The guy was the real deal. I don't know. He must have gone to Vatican City to buy the stuff. He must have ordered. Can you order online? Can the Pope order online a new costume? Is there a website for the Pope to order his new costume online? You go to Amazon, you can buy what? Yeah? In B'nai Brak, there's a couple in B'nai Brak, they make the yarmulkes for the Vatican. What's so bad? What's so bad? Maybe it'll So Rabbi, this is a very big dilemma. Should a child, should a person play the part? Now, one thing, it goes without saying, if a person does not need to sit in a wheelchair, it's not, you don't play games. Your parents are very mocked on this. The children, they don't understand this. Let's say there's an elderly grandparent and there's a wheelchair in the house, or there's a cane, or there are crutches. There are all different types of medical things that are lying around the house. And let's say the grandparents, elderly grandparents, and the kids start playing with it. You see this all the time. They sit in the wheelchair, or they sit here, and parents get very upset. Even though they never heard the Sefer Chassidim, they get very disturbed. They don't sit in the wheelchair.
They're not going to take the part of it.
Exactly. It says here. It's exactly what it said. Where does it come from? It comes from over here. And parents, they get nervous, not because of religious reasons. What?
The
benefits.
Yeah, for your benefit, to fool people.
To fool people. So is that really what he says? Is that, he breaks up into two parts. The first part he says about money. To fool people for money. You're right. You're saying this is a debate. It's not so clear. He's very vague. You have lost in all these sources. He's very, very vague. But this is a fact. This is something which other commentators say this, and I really think it's probably built upon a lot of this type of stuff. Like this really fits. Maybe there's even another Sefer Chassidim that says it more explicitly. Goes without saying to make believe you're deformed or have a deformity in order to get money. That's outright gezel. That's outright gezel, but he's going further. It's a curse. It's not just that you're ganof, Rachmana Litzlan, the day will come when actually you'll suffer this curse. And then he goes on to say these two things: don't make believe you're blind, and don't make believe that you can't walk. And he doesn't say over here in order.
Money.
Advantage. Why do you want to do it?
Connected.
Okay, could be in a chanami. But as an extension of this, it's your dua. It is your dua. Al tiftach pel satan. Rachmana, a person does not play around with, you don't sit on a shiva chair. Okay? Even Tisha B'Av. I find it very disturbing. Someone comes Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is not. Is Avelus Yashana. We sit on the floor. People have all these crazy things, the gadgets they bring with them to shul. But I find it very unsettling when someone will come with a Tisha B'Av chair on Tisha B'Av. Shiva Chair. It's not Shiva. It's Tisha B'Av. We're all Avelim. We all sit on the floor. But this chair, it has a different meaning. It's a frightening thing. Don't take the box of the Shiva. People are, they don't see the box of the Misaskim. Baruch Hashem put everyone out of business. But you remember the olden days? They had these cardboard boxes. These boxes. So people, you'd walk in, so you would see. You would see in the street for garbage pickup, before the recycling days, you would see in the street all the time those cardboard boxes that were given to them by the chaplains. And that meant they just got off from Shiva. And you see those boxes in the street for garbage collection. So today, Misaskim put everyone out of business. They come, they bring comfortable chairs, whatever it is. So, oh, it's Tisha B'Av. So take those boxes and bring them to the Tisha B'Av to sit there at night. So sitting on the floor, you have a perfect thing to sit on. No. Tisha B'Av is Tisha B'Av, and sitting Shiva. You don't do it. It's not, you don't. I was once in a Shiva home, a little kid, what did you want for a little kid? The kid was 3 years old, and the parent went to go wherever, got at the lunch, went to the bathroom during Shiva, and the kid sat down in the Shiva chair. Yes, anyway, that's what he sits in another chair that's that size when he sits by the table. Well, the parent came home and saw the kid sitting in the Shiva chair, the parent almost fainted. The piano, I'm sitting in there, you're not sitting in the Shevet Shea over here. The kid didn't have no clue what he was doing. The parent almost went berserk. Like, you don't sit in the Shevet Shea. It's not just, so a parent is sensitive to this. But if you're not a parent, just stop as a, you go to the hospital, you go there, and there's a wheelchair, the guy sits in the wheelchair. It's not the right thing to do. In fact, I was once in the hospital with my parent, and there were some orderlies. And they were not really, should not have been hired by the hospital. They were joking around in a ward of very, very sick people. And they were taking a break, whatever, and in the hall in the hospital there were wheelchairs all over the place, as you know. And one guy was sitting in the wheelchair. He was sitting in the wheelchair, and then they started joking around, and the very sick people were there, and someone there complained, and basically they were fired, because I was there over a long period of time with my parents there, and someone complained, and they came up, someone from downstairs, they came up, and they made an investigation, they even interviewed me, what did you see? No, they care because it's money. It's money for them because, you know, they get a reputation. This goes on YouTube. They're finished. Okay, today you just need someone to take a little video and goes on YouTube. Look what's going on in this premier hospital. You know, they're finished. What do they care? They have fire. And they made an investigation. They even asked me, they interviewed me very briefly. They wanted to know exactly what I saw, what happened, what exactly. And basically, the guy was fired, and it was very disturbing. The whole thing, and the guy was very hurt that he was fired. It was very clear when he realized that he got caught, and he realized that it was not appropriate what he did in this area. Okay, but if you learn Sefer Chassidim, you don't sit on that chair altogether. If you're blessed not to need it, you don't go there. Okay, now by extension, Purim. This I've seen this written up. It's very, very frightening. Is it appropriate to get dressed up like a villain? Even Purim. Haman, Achashverosh. A pirate, you know, that's more pirate. You know, that's a little more pirate, but a person, a well-known person. It's not so simple. I think the Chassam Sofer, I don't remember exactly. Someone saw a write-up, I don't remember where I saw this, many, many years ago, about it. He says that the people in his class that got dressed up like Haman in life did not do very well. They just did not have a lot of hatzlacha in life, to say the least. Now, does that mean anything? Does that mean, you did this, so you brought it upon yourself? Or does it mean just generally, that's where you're holding him? The same way when they're adults, they got into trouble. When they were children, they identified with this type of thing, so they You know, they naturally, but one thing has nothing to do with the other. Oh, it's not because when I was a child, I got dressed up like Haman. I had bad mazel my whole life. I became a troublemaker in life. You can't say that. You know, that's a little bit, especially in our generation, that's a little bit of an extreme thing to do. But, you know, it's interesting when a child comes home and says to you, I want the nicest costume I ever saw that made an impression upon me. Well, there are two costumes, I'll tell you. One was this year. I could not believe it. A guy I know well, he got dressed up like an NFL referee. It was so good. It was so good. Because the guy, that's who he is. That's his personality. Ever seen these NFL referees? The NFL, how they, you guys watch a football game? And his costume was authentic. He had the real stuff with all the paraphernalia, all the bells and whistles, all the trimmings. It was so good. I could not stop. Looking at him and watching him. And that's a secular look. But the other time of my life I really was impressed was a child was dressed up like a Sefer Torah. Achnosa Sefer Torah. Achnosa Sefer Torah. And the child was the Sefer Torah. So can you imagine, a child comes off from yeshiva and he says, what do you want to get dressed up for on Purim? So the child, I want to be a Sefer Torah. Or, I want to be Haman. I mean, what does a parent have more nachas for? When the child says he wants to be a Sefer Torah. I mean, that's a pretty serious thing. Putting yourself in these type of situations is not poshut. It is not simple. Today, we live in Baruch Hashem, in a very religious world. And in the yeshiva katanas, they have a very big problem with these type of plays. Yeah, they have plays, and it's a necessity, but a lot of, they're very limited in the script. In the script and the screenwriting, because they really don't want, they're sensitive, they don't, you have to have every play has a villain and a hero. Okay, this is the Aleph base, this is the villain, the hero. It's very difficult to assign the role of the villain to a child. It borders upon what it says over here in this chazal. You don't make believe something that's not to your advantage. You don't sit in a wheelchair if you don't need it. You don't make believe you're blind if you don't need it. So being an actor for a religious Jew is not a simple matter. It's not a simple matter to take on the identity of something that is not good. Does that mean spiritually it has an effect on you? Does it mean that subconsciously in the world of nature, if I am viewed as being portrayed as a person who's blind, it changes my whole life? No one can tell you that answer.
Your purpose is not to fool anyone. An actor is not fooling anyone.
You're right, that is correct. But still in all, in Jewish thought, it's not looked up to. Why not? I can't define for you why not. Either it's something that's more spiritual, esoteric, maybe. Is it something which it trickles down in your mind? If this is the way I'm portrayed by people, they remember me. Look at Christopher Reeve. Okay, I grew up in the era of Superman. Superman. Okay? Okay? Today, I don't think today it could exist such a thing, because the world to a very large was a much purer world than today is such a filthy, dirty world in the world of entertainment. Okay, but in those days, new Superman. Okay, Superman. A lot of people my age grew up. So was it so terrible? And people like, you know. That's who he was. Everyone you see, Chris. Who is he? This is Superman. Right, this is Superman. Whenever you'll see him in any role or anything, and what happened to him, he became a paraplegic. Okay, paraplegic, the complete opposite extreme of being a Superman. And so we'll say, no, Pavakert, he really, I mean, I will listen to an interview. I was really blown away by the interview, and he described that what happened to him. He really, really sincerely wanted to commit suicide. Got to a point, although, go online, look all this stuff up. He really got to a point of depression that's just not to be believed. And probably the only reason why he didn't commit suicide was because he physically couldn't. Okay? That's the only reason why. And then he had like a change of heart. And he decided, you gotta listen to this, that he's gonna be the Superman. He's going to one day walk again. And to the extremes that he went to exercise and to attempt to rejuvenate his spine, it's just not to be, it's real. He became a Superman. Now, not coming to his private life, was not such a holy person. Okay, I'm not going in that direction. He didn't have really, but in this respect, in this area, it made a very big impression upon me. So now, you as a religious Jew, you look at this. Don't make believe to be who you're not. Okay, he, at the end of his life, for many years, viewed himself to be Superman in a very noble and very great way, and gave a lot of chizuk to many people that you have to now achieve the impossible and be able to walk again once a day. If he was not Superman and perceived by literally hundreds of millions of people in this world, hundreds of millions of people all over the world, as Superman, would he have achieved that yearning and that what he did for all of those years, which is not to be taken lightly? You can't just dismiss this. I don't think so. I think that the beginning of his life prepared him for what he did at the end of his life. And so now we as religious Jews, we read the Sefer Hasidim, you know, we don't know what, there's a lot of depth in this. And is depth good? And there's Rahman al-Islam, the other way around. If you want to make yourself into a Haman, you want to dress up as a Haman, what is that trigger in your mind later in life? A child on Purim is the big celebrity, and he's preparing for the play, practice, and now you know all your friends, I'm Haman, I'm the villain. How does that trickle down? How does it trickle down in the world of the Olam in Shemayim, in the spiritual, esoteric Hashpoyos that come to, and how does it trickle down just subconsciously? Talk to a psychologist, the Olam HaTeva. These are very frightening things, which, you know, we don't really know what it means. But that's what it says here. He touches upon this. Over here, he's talking about money, deception to get benefits, entitlements, government fraud. Okay, that's a given. It's almost too simplistic. It's too simplistic. Don't make believe that you're a cripple so the government should go on welfare. You'll say the curse is what he means. The day will come when attacker will be, he will be cursed. Okay, is that all it means, or there's more to it? It's something to think about. Okay, I'll stop here.
I have two questions. First, you told that you're